Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Do subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, and please do give us a 5-star like and share with your colleagues. Thank you.
So today for Goals Question Time, I'm with Natalie Solonki, who's the European Council for Fleet Corps. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Well, if you kick off with a brief introduction about yourself, please, and Fleet Corps.
Sure, so I'm currently the head of legal for Europe at Fleet Corps. If you don't already know, Fleet Corps is a global provider of specialised payments products and various different services to fleets, oil companies like BP and Shell, and petroleum marketers. So in my role, I sit on the UK and European management teams. And as part of my role, I'm sort of seen as a strategic advisor, advising on different sort of legal matters and developments across different geographies. I cover the UK, Europe, Asia and Australasia.
Great. And your prior roles and how you come to this position?
Yeah, sure. So I've carried out a number of similar roles, during my career. Previously, I was at Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which is, some of you may know the brand, it's the US's largest car rental company. Prior to that, I was at a company called NetSuite, which is now part of Oracle. It's a US listed company that deals with cloud sort of solutions. My first head of legal role was when I was at a company called Vendor, which was a UK based e-commerce platform. Interestingly, I was sort of, it was my first head of legal role at the age of 27, so relatively young. I guess prior to that, I was in Travelex's legal team, which was great fun, having trained at Taylor Wessing, which is an international law firm based in London.
Great, and your current role, what are you responsible for?
So quite a lot, I guess. I've been responsible for, I guess, technically all company legal matters, in these roles. Advising shareholders, the directors, executive management. Interestingly, when I was at Vendor, that culminated in a sale of the business, which was an interesting project to work on. We were preparing for an IPO as well, although that didn't go ahead. And also some sort of things like fundraising rounds, debt restructurings and that sort of thing. I guess here, because it's sort of more of a head of legal role than a sort of general counsel type role, not only is it legal matters, but it's more sort of people focused on being responsible for a team. So that's something I'm quite passionate about. Training lawyers of the future, encouraging people to grow. I think that's a really important part of the role of a head of legal.
Great. So the reason we first connected was seeing how technology is going to change the sort of legal process. And, I've been particularly interested in how technology is disrupting different industries. And law and law firms and internal legal things are now changing. I'd really appreciate your insights in how you're seeing technology changing now processes within companies on the legal side.
So, like the companies themselves, we're seeing much more use of tech. And I think, as a legal department, you can't really get away from that. I guess historically, law firms and in-house legal teams would have seen something like Practical Law and Westlaw, these sort of research tools, as being things that they go to for the last sort of 10-15 years, rather than sort of going to a law library and sifting through books. I guess we've come a long way since then, and I think we're at an era now where there's just a lot of choice on the market. There's a lot out there. I think there's probably so much that's actually kind of getting quite overwhelming and difficult for people to really know, what's best in class or what should they be focusing on. I think when you're in a legal team, within a business, I think one of the key things is looking at, what your business already has and how you can sort of piggyback on that, or how you can get involved with perhaps integrating that into what your teams do. So, some of the things that we tend to see in, legal teams and sort of the process sort of pieces that you'd be thinking about, a lot of companies, if you're in a legal team, you're supporting the sales team. So things like, Salesforce.com, a big sort of CRM system that your sales teams would be using, what sort of ways can you as the legal function be leveraging that tool to kind of make your life easier and that of your business partners? So mm-hmm. whether that's empowering the business guys to, you know, be able to kind of take their contracts from inception to getting it out to the other side, whether it's storing contracts, so contracts databases, you know, before you would have had, you know, probably somewhere underground, a big cellar with all your sort of safes in with your original documents. You know, some companies don't even have the originals anymore, they're keeping scans. So how do you get copies of things accessible in a way that, you know, you don't need people managing that function and that sort of thing. There are really interesting sort of pieces that are looking at more sort of clever technology like contract automation tools. So you've got companies like SpringCM, for example, which are looking at ways at which you can take a contract flow and put it into a series of questionnaires or a self-service type portal that, you know, you don't need it to be a legal team to use, you can actually be a business user. So that's quite an interesting thing too. I guess, you know, one of the things that's useful for me and that I've been thinking about more recently, given, you know, my team are based in different countries on different IT infrastructures, so we can't always go to one place currently to get copies of templates or right. to share knowledge. Collaboration tools are actually finding their way into the market as being quite popular. So you've got companies like HiQ who have these sort of dashboards or these portals that you can go to that can store documents, that you can converse through, that you can track things. And, you know, the clever sort of bits that they include are data analytics. So you can start to use these kind of collaboration tools with not only your internal teams, but your external teams, start to really understand, well, who's working on what. What part of the business is taking the most of our focus? Is it the right amount of focus? You know, can even incorporate concepts like time recording. Yes, okay, in private practice, you know, people hope that when you come into in-house, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of data out there that you can start to capture as the legal function that could help you with your business case and just to manage a better you know, team. You know, the other side of things, which I haven't sort of looked at myself implementing yet, but are sort of the e-billing and sort of, you know, law firm management type tools. So a collaboration tool can allow you to have good visibility of who's working on what. When you look at e-billing, how can you kind of make the process of understanding what your lawyers have been spending time on externally, whether it's been done in the right way, in the right profile, and whether it's to sort of, you know, the quotes that you've been getting, all the sudden rules that you've kind of decided that you want to live by. Those tools can be quite useful as well. I guess especially when you've, you know, got thousands of matters that are flowing through your team, I think those solutions are quite interesting there and can help with some of those pain points. You've got some interesting solutions like Aperio out there that are looking not only just at the getting the billing cycle, you know, in a good way, but are actually giving you that insight into a law firm's way of, you know, breaking down the time and what they're actually doing in real time, which, you know, before you'd never have that ability to do because you wouldn't know unless you asked the partner or asked the people who are working on it. And that could even take time out of their day to be reporting back to you on what they're actually doing.
Charges you back again.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, there's quite a lot out there.
Yeah. And certainly one of the aspects you highlighted, I recently did a podcast with Seed Legals, which is doing the sort of legal flow for raising finance, seed, equity sort of type finance. And like one of the examples you gave there is similar to that of putting the process in place with standard documents, with questions and templates, which makes it much easier for the founders and for the investors to understand what's going into the document, which then becomes quite a thick, complex document, but they're automating that and making it a lot more efficient for the industry. So it sounds like you're seeing some examples through your sector in this.
Yeah, and I guess it's not just about benefiting, I guess, the business that you work for. I think it's also making or freeing up lawyer time or team time to actually do things that are interesting. Mm. So, you know, if you've got an NDA, for example, you know, if you've got a junior lawyer or a paralegal working on that, they only need to do a handful of them to probably master
yeah.
the sort of key issues. They don't need to keep repeating that task. So I think, you know, there's a way of blending the sort of training side and the sort of, you know, making things more interesting for your team as well as being efficient for your business. I think that's a double win.
Yeah, yeah. So at the Barclays Law Tech Eagle Lab where we first met, you were talking about the introduction of these external sort of legal software and the ventures that and how that process works. And just with the examples, the different types of tools and the different tech you're talking about now, How do you go about introducing those and then implementing the change? Because yes, it's easy having all the tech there in your on your system, but it's that implementation and business change is so important. How are you going about that?
Well, I think you really need to, I guess, do your research, or I think sort of taking a step back, you need to look at what your problem is. And so I think a lot of people and teams, you know, and functions out there are feeling a little bit worried that they're being left behind if they're not investing in technology. But there's no reason to invest in technology unless technology is the solution to your problem. So I think a lot of the times it's kind of taking that step back and looking at those pain points, whether it's within your own team, whether it's within the business, and then starting to work out, well, what's the business case you get from that? Mm-hmm. So I guess before you kind of put your business case together, you kind of need to know, well, what are the players that are out there? I think research is key. And as I sort of alluded to earlier, it's a big market out there. I think I've never seen the legal tech market being as buoyant as it is. There's just so many options. Yeah. But then it's, you know, because there are so many options, you don't know which one's the best. And all of that fear of failure, you know, you don't want to choose the wrong tool, right? So, you know, I think, how do people go about that? How do GCs, heads of legal, do that? I mean, there are lots of conferences out there where you've got certain players who are kind of giving talks about what they're doing, GCs who are talking about what they've implemented. You know, I think asking your sort of networks really important. So if you're a head of legal GC, asking your friends, you know, what are they using is a good sort of indication too, because you'll probably get an honest appraisal. But, you know, just because your friend may have had an issue with that tool doesn't mean it's not, you know, going to work for you. So I think getting those demos from those companies is really important. And lots of these companies will be more than happy to talk you through the product and actually sometimes even give you a month or so's free trial to get using it to really kind of get that user experience. So, you know, I think that's a really important place to start. There are some good sort of websites out there that do break down what's in the market. I think a really good one is Richard Troman's site. I don't know if you've heard about The Artificial Lawyer.
Okay.
So if you go on theartificiallawyer.com, what he does is he breaks down the market, or the legal tech market, into the different types of tools available and gives a very, I guess, objective appraisal as to what the companies are and what the technology is doing. I guess what it doesn't do, and that's why I said it's worth speaking to your friends, is sort of give you that feel for, you know, is it really as good as it sounds on the tin? I think that's why, you know, a combination of these different researchers is probably going to get you to that point where you kind of know what's probably a good sort of viable solution for you. So we've talked about, you know, identify the problem, do some research, and then, like in any business, you need to put a business case forward because nothing comes for free. I think one of the issues that I've seen is that, you know, the tech budgets, or the budgets that are required to cover anything that involves a bit of IT development, are covered by your technology budget as opposed to a legal budget. Yeah. I think that can be a real sort of challenge. So normally, you know, if it's practical law or if it's a law firm doing something, you can sneak it in because that's just part of your regular services that you're getting from your you know, your trusted law firm. When it comes from actually having something direct with a technology provider, it's like a whole new, you know, world that you've got to sort of go through. And so getting that business case together and thinking about how either this tool can add value or it's solving a problem that the business has identified, I think if you can flow your arguments to fit into those sort of categories, then you're more likely to get that over the line. So, you know, an example I've got is that, you know, we've identified when we were doing the GDPR audit work that we don't have a great central repository for our contracts. And, you know, I'm reluctant for the legal team to be the owner of a contract management system because, you know, you do need a few more people to sort of get involved. So yeah. I've sort of put that to the business and it's actually your problem, not mine, because I'm not the safeguarder or owner of all your signed contracts. So what are we going to do about it? Well, I've done some research. Here are the different providers. You know, what are we going to do together? And so we're currently building that business case. I guess, you know, we're trying to put together a requirements gathering, so like you would with any technology project. And I guess, you know, that's probably where it's a bit difficult for lawyers, because we're not used to these type of projects where you then enter into a stream which is sort of outside of your comfort zone. You're then actually going into a technology implementation stream, which, you know, unless you're a technology lawyer, you're not going to be very familiar with. So I think, you know, just getting more comfortable with what that process looks like and then trying to make sure that people are on side, you know, I think is really important. I guess, you know, just the final thing, as I mentioned before, if you can get your existing providers or, you know, whoever you've got supplying the businesses to either extend a business case to cover legal, or if you've got your law firms, if they can assist in, you know, coming up with a solution that is via them, then you might actually find that you're able to implement it quicker than if you were trying to do it yourself.
Great. There are some good examples in that there in making that change happen. So what sort of failures or learnings have you experienced and led through these changes?
I think one of the key concerns and people worry about, and it's one I think about when I'm looking at sort of different solutions and tools, is how interoperable are they and how future-proof are they? Because you know, nobody wants to be stuck with something that isn't going to get any updates or patched and is just going to have issues and has a shelf life. So I think not only do you want to make sure that you know, the company that you're partnering with feels like it's got a good roadmap and that it's actually a stable company, you want to make sure that it actually plugs into what you're using and that you can actually easily incorporate it into your systems and processes and way that you work. So, you know, the more sort of logins you have, more, you know, additional sort of ways of getting in that aren't so seamless. You know, if you're looking at a Salesforce environment, there's a lot of different tools. Like I said, sort of Spring CM, for example, that integrates with Salesforce, which means that people can sort of have their contract automation done in a Salesforce environment so that the sales guy doesn't need to leave that and it's something they're comfortable with, rather than taking them to a platform that, like, already is badged legal. And it's already scary, no zone, and that's for the legal team to do and not them. So I think there's quite a lot around just the way you think about sort of implementing those sort of things in that way. I mean, sort of other learnings that I've got, I mean, it's difficult when you're in a global business, you always have a dominant headquarters. So, you know, I'm head of legal for the European arm of Fleet Corps, but, you know, we're headquartered in the US. So when it comes to these tools, you know, how do you make sure that your needs are catered for on a European basis, remembering that Europe is made up of many countries and, you know, have different laws and rules. Sometimes if it's led by a central sort of parts like the US, they're not always having your best interests or, you know, your nuances at heart. Yeah. So it's really important to try and get involved in these projects early. And if you hear about these things, get influencing early to make sure that, that the decision isn't made to take a tool that might not actually work in the ways you want it to. You know, we're seeing that with, we're trying to roll out an HR tool internally at the moment, and, you know, the way that we set it up to be compliant with data protection legislation is proving to be, you know, something we need to really think about. And if we'd have gone with the initial iteration, we'd have potentially had all of our data hosted in the US and processed in the US, which isn't always an ideal solution, right. Especially when you're dealing with countries like Russia, which have very, very strict laws on the way that they want their data hosted, let alone shared. So, you know, those sort of things really come into it if you're doing your due diligence early on, and you won't realise that those are issues until, you know, you might be too late. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the budgeting process and getting support. I think, you know, I find that if you talk about things more, people become comfortable with the idea more. So don't be afraid to talk about, you know, one day I want this tool. I want to, we're going to have a contract database. We're going to be having this automated contract solution. Because the more you talk about when you do need to get the business case across, you need to get that support, people aren't scared and don't know what you're talking about,
right. Yeah.
Which, you know, helps kind of that drip feeding approach I've found has helped. And then for me, talking about it with multiple different stakeholders, hopefully at some point, you know, when it sort of comes to the time is right, that I've connected the dots for you and already be on side. So make sure your IT sort of director is involved, make sure your sales person is involved, make sure whoever is like running your region understands that these are the sort of tools you need to do your job. We talked about the IT build case and requirements gathering earlier. You know, I think really understanding what your problem is and the reason this solution fits it will help you then put the business case together much more clearly. If you don't do that, then, you know, somebody's either going to be picking holes in why you don't really need this, because, you know, this is something that from most people's perspective, you've got people, there's not a problem. You know, what are you trying to fix here?
Yeah.
And trying to get that idea of efficiency as a motive and as a goal, as opposed to something that's nice to have, I think is an important part of the narrative. And I guess, you know, finally, I think for me what I've learned, you know, we've been looking at our contract automation, sort of contract management tool, that was a US-led initiative for a while, and that's why I'm sort of talking from a little bit of experience of how I kind of found my way to influence and be involved in the process, is that these things can take time, and they can take longer than you think. And, you know, if you work in a business where you've got sort of yearly and annual budgets, you know, you might kind of think about something 1 year, but you might not be able to implement it or get it there until the following year. And I think just being patient, but also kind of picking up on those signals of when to kind of say, hey, that could have been dealt with better had we had this tool, I think it just starts to make it a little bit more normalised.
Yeah. No, I think fantastic examples there through all the stakeholder management throughout the business, rather than legal being seen as this backstop or the one who's going to be causing you the pain for not being doing business. I think you've highlighted there about planning ahead and seeing yourself as a key business partner in IT and sales and all that, as you've talked through that. That's great. So what do you see as some of the biggest opportunities now for new technologies that will impact the role of sort of legal support within business? Because, you know, I'm seeing, as an example, I see big impacts when you're going to have automatic line transactions happening, which could become more prevalent with blockchain, and either for the normal processes of a business or in YARS, where you're dealing with lots of payment transactions and interactions and sort of stuff like that. These automatic system things, you know, might become technically feasible, but whether they become legally feasible or business process feasible. So where are you seeing some of those opportunities coming?
I think there's loads of stuff that can be, you know, automated. I think it just relies on trust on both sides to commit to going through an exchange of, you know, technology and rules, as opposed to people making decisions behind the scenes. I guess you're kind of programming in advance in the event that you've got your decision tree that gets you to a certain point, you know, whether that's through blockchain or not. I mean, one of the things I think about a lot is NDAs. And I've had a few conversations with, you know, some of the heads of technology of some law firms on this. And, you know, a lot of legal teams spend a lot of time on NDAs. And, you know, really the question is, how much value is there to a business in doing that? So one of the ideas is you kind of farm that off to the business, you empower them, you get them to be able to, you know, either through a contract automation tool, as we sort of said, like Spring, you get them programming them themselves and sending them out. What would be great, though, I think, is if both parties didn't even have to have that discussion. You've already got an exchange where you sort of, you know, have your standard terms, they have their standard terms, and you have your rules and fallbacks built in, so that something happens from a technology, you know, data perspective, it's kind of done in the sort of ether, and then it comes out, and you've got a document that is the document that, you know, if you'd had a manual discussion about it, would have taken, you know, an hour or two, and actually it can be done in seconds, because you've just given your best position in secondary and tertiary positions into your sort of negotiation tool. I think that would save a lot, but, you know, I think people are a little bit sort of worried about, do they lose control over that? I think where you've got kind of quite standard documents like ISDAs and stuff like that, maybe that's a good kind of market for those, and very sort of standard, you know, loan documentation or whatever. And then the blockchain piece, you know, you're getting that kind of security of, or evidence of, you know, the journey of the document, and you've got that integrity kind of built into some code. I mean, you know, great stuff as long as you can read it, you know, when it comes out. So we're not seeing much of that yet, though, and I think, you know, for lawyers to trust that will be the first step. But I think there's a lot there that could be built if we just gave into it and submitted. I think we've already seen a lot in the sort of document review space, and I think that really has started to revolutionise, you know, the profession. I mean, you know, back in the day, if you had a big, you know, litigation, or you had a big M&A transaction, you know, I remember being that trainee stuck in a room with 30-odd boxes that you need to kind of file through, you're getting paper cuts and all sorts, and it's, you know, not that glamorous, you haven't seen daylight for a week. You know, if you've got sort of technology that can help identify key terms and read things that would normally take a human eye and a person much longer, you know, you're taking people who, you know, are much better utilised to actually be using their brains more engaged than, you know, basically being a glorified scanner, right?
Yeah.
So we're already seeing those, you know, companies like Kira, solutions like Kira kind of doing that, and are already sort of, you know, doing great things with some really good law firms and some great sort of success stories out there. Yeah, we talked about smart contracts as well. And, you know, for me, a smart contract is something that allows me to understand what's in it without having to read it. So if you can be smart enough to identify, whether it's through metadata, you know, it can be tagged in a certain way that, you know, if we want to know what are the change of control causes in, you know, all of our certain contracts because we're going to sell a business, or, you know, have we varied this particular position in relation to RPI increases or whatever. If you can track that electronically rather than a spreadsheet or manually, or by then inputting data separately, you know, which people do, you can still input that data and then it's all electronically available. If you can do that by virtue of the code that's embedded in an object, in a document, that is really compelling. And so all the contract summaries that people do, all the clause databases that you do, you know, you don't need to keep those anymore because it's going to be automatically applied by virtue of this document being scanned into a technology solution. And, you know, got things like HotDocs and Jira, quite good examples of companies which are already thinking about, as you program your document, how it captures those changes and variances and then is able to take that data into a reportable format.
Right.
And that's great because, you know, a lot of time spent on sort of sifting through creating, you know, these type of summary docs, you can get technology to do that, then you're just saving yourself so much time.
Yeah. As you said, it's not value add, and the legal or the business team could be spent doing value add things.
Well, exactly. I think, as I said before, you know, it's good to know the methodology. I think that's what we need to sort of remember with these technology solutions, right? The technology solution is only good as the way you code it and set it up. So in order to be able to set it up, you do need to understand the problems, the touch points, and what can work and what doesn't work. And so you've got to try it in a traditional way, or you've got to look at different ways of being able to do it to be able to identify those failures and touch points. So, you know, I think that's an important part that you can't lose. I think at this stage anyway, while this is still very new, people will still have to understand what is required before it becomes a very automated process that a coder will write and a lawyer will never touch, because it will just be a way of you know, achieving a problem. I think finally, you know, in light of the GDPR last year, you know, we are seeing much more technology in the sort of data loss and cybersecurity space. And is it technically legal tool? Not really, but, you know, if you're dealing with a big data breach and you need to, you know, what data is being sort of, you know, touched and who you need to notify, and those do have really strong legal consequences, I think we're seeing much more tools like that on the market. I think a good example of that's like Tessian, which I think is able to identify personal data that's out there and what could have been compromised and not. And so if you're a GC or a head of legal, you're dealing with that as a crisis management type point. I mean, these tools in those situations are the difference between actually meeting your deadlines with the regulator or, you know, not, but and then having still a big manpower job where you're going to be spending a lot of time on, you know, all sorts of different professionals to be sort of sifting through and helping you out.
Yeah, oh, fascinating. I think you've covered there, you know, lots of great stuff in terms of the problems within the business, embedding legal within the business and that sort of change aspects, and giving those examples there where you know, regulation is going to change, data is going to change, and that will have legal implications. That's a fantastic, you know, insight. So, what do you do to relax when you're not embedding yourself in the business and sifting through documents and getting paper cuts?
Yeah, well, I think my geeky response was going to be actually, it is a bit of a hobby of mine, and I think you know, I do urge and encourage a lot of heads of legal, or just lawyers in general, to be a bit more curious about tech and less afraid. I think, you know, it's kind of got to a point where, as I said, the market's so saturated, I think people are starting to feel left behind. So I think one of my hobbies is actually attending these sort of legal tech conferences, talking about it, because inadvertently it does relax me, because it makes me feel more comfortable that I know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm probably a little bit more in control of this kind of legal tech chaos. But, you know, I guess the more fun answer is I just returned from a ski trip the beginning of this week, so snowboarding in the winter, probably scuba diving in the summer.
Plenty of snow around then.
It was absolutely superb, and no injuries, which is always good. Yeah.
Very good. So thanks so much, Natalie, for your insights at Fleet Corp. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Do subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, and please do give us a 5-star like and share with your colleagues. Thank you.